I was going to turn to Paul's moronic rant in Romans 7:1, I open a news article that I want to share a little bit from you, with you. The Ebola virus has now spread into Nigeria, which is Africa's most populous nation. It now has two cases of Ebola, both of which emerged over this past weekend. If you've been following this story, when we first started covering it, about 50 people had died, and then it was 75, and then it was 100, and then it was called the worst outbreak ever when it reached about 150. And then what was an outbreak in one Western African country became two, and then two became three. And now three have become four. Even in articles that were written at the end of last week, the death toll from Ebola was about 650 to 700 people. The death toll now is 887. It has centered on Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, which are either almost all Islamic or now with a huge Islamic contingency. There is now one person, and soon will be two, Americans with Ebola in the United States. The reality is that there is no cure for Ebola. Ebola is a horrible disease. It has two attributes which make it really horrible. One is that every part of a person's secretions are infected, and that's how it spreads. So the victim bleeds out through their eyes, through their gums, therefore through their mouth. From their nasal secretions and saliva and everything, their urine and their feces become contaminated. And so if you're a loved one, and you see a child, or if you're a son and you see your daughter and you see your mother and father infected with the disease, the natural, compassionate thing to do is to try to care for them. But by caring for them, by wiping away any of these secretions, you become infected. And the second is that it is a slow death. There's a 3-week incubation period where in the first week there are no symptoms, and the second week the symptoms are flu-like. And the third, the telltale signs of the virus become evident. There is only one remedy for Ebola. There's always been only one: quarantine. And it's not just quarantine. It's cremation of everyone infected. If someone comes down with the disease, the most humane thing to do is to, sorry to say, it's just to let them die. And as it relates to doing the most merciful thing for unaffected individuals, it's to quarantine those who have been affected. Don't let them move. And the hard thing here is, because there's a 3-week incubation period, anybody from that area can't leave. And all you can do is to have those who live in the contaminated area immediately isolate and then cremate not only the infected person, but everything associated with them. And that's all you can do. And if you don't do those things, then the disease just spreads. It goes from killing 50 to 100 to 200 to 700 to 900, and soon it's thousands. I share this story at the as I'm about ready to dive back into the plague that is Pauline Christianity, as to share with you that the most deadly pathogens ever unleashed on this planet are not viruses like Ebola. Now, Ebola is a serpentine virus. If you look at the actual virus, the characteristics of the virus is it's, when magnetized, it's a serpent-like looking creature. Well, religions are serpentine too. They're from the great serpent, the adversary, Hillel ben Shakar, known as Hasatan. And they infect and kill more people than do these kinds of viruses. And the only solution for religious contamination is quarantine. Those affected need to be, not have shrines built to them. They can't be buried. They need to be cremated. It needs to go up in smoke. And those who have been infected need to be isolated. Ebola explains the nature of the pathogen that is most deadly to humankind today. You look at what Islam is doing in the Islamic world. 250 million little girls sexually savaged by female genital mutilation. You look at what Hamas is doing to Israel. You look at what the Islamic State is doing in now Lebanon, in Syria, and in Iraq. And soon it will spread. This is a pathogen that has to be quarantined. Just as we must say, listen, the only humane thing to do for humanity at large is to isolate those regions that are affected with Ebola, not let anyone in or out, and then to provide kerosene, gasoline, to completely cremate, to burn everything associated with those who is affected. That's all we can do. It's the most humane thing to do. It's the only way to keep other people from becoming infected. It is why Yahweh, when his chosen people were returning from 400 years of captivity in Egypt, told them that there were towns that were plagued with a deadly pathogen whose iniquity was so egregious, there was no hope for them, and that that plague had to be quarantined and eradicated. Otherwise, it would continue to infect and kill in far greater numbers than any disease ever has. That's why Yahweh called Paul the plague of death. I said earlier in this program that Islam is the most deadly disease ever perpetrated on humankind. And while that is a statement that is true, considering how militant Islam has been, and barbaric Islam has been, and how Islam has always spread by the sword, killing all non-Muslims, Christianity has plagued more souls. It has been more deadly in terms of the breadth of souls that it has plagued with its disease. And there is only one solution. I know that it sounds extraordinarily radical when I say that Islam needs to be declared illegal and quarantined, but it is the most merciful thing that could possibly happen. You can't reason with a Muslim. You aren't going to extract Islam from them. There is no antidote for the religion. The only thing you can do to protect the rest of us from Islam is to quarantine it, to declare it illegal, to declare it a threat to humanity, and to quarantine it. It is the only hope. Just as that is the only hope for those who have Ebola, no matter how compassionate you may be. The two doctors that are being brought into the United States, a man and a woman, through compassion went to the plagued areas to try to help those with Ebola, but you can't help them. There's no antidote for Ebola. And so now, because they went there to try to help those who were beyond help, they're dying of this disease and been brought back to the United States. I don't recall the U.S. government asking for a referendum on the people as to whether or not this plague should be brought into the country. And, you know, since there was no referendum on whether or not this plague should be brought into the country, don't beguile yourself into believing that America is a democracy. We weren't asked to choose. The disease was brought in. And it's no different, really, than the disease of Islam being here. I know that sounds harsh, but it only sounds harsh because so many people are ignorant of the nature of such diseases. A good friend of mine, over this past weekend, had reason to have a discussion with, because of a neighborhood situation, with an officer who is now just leaving. I will leave the name of the organization unsaid, but let's say that they are a specialist working for the Department of Defense and Intelligence. And that they've now been lured away by a private company looking to take advantage of this woman's contacts within the U.S. military for the private business to sell the U.S. military some contrivance. And the discussion came up, speaking of military intelligence, of the website Prophet of Doom, which has been down. It's soon to be brought back up. I'm going to bring it back up in the simplest way. We're going to present the book Prophet of Doom, which is 1,000 pages long as a PDF. And so this individual who played an enormous role in Prophet of Doom asked her what she thought of the Prophet of Doom website, since it was the most effective, the most best documented presentation of the Islamic scriptures to identify the connection between Islam, this most deadly of pathogens, this most harsh of plagues on humanity. And she works in intelligence. You would think that you would view Prophet of Doom as being a godsend, as being an enormously valuable tool in dealing with exposing and condemning the religion that was responsible for 99.9% of terrorism, since that's your job in intelligence with the U.S. military. But she was opposed to it. She says, oh, no, there's a lot of neo-Nazi types that are associated with that. Well, the fact is there's not a single neo-Nazi that's associated with it. Not one. Matter of fact, those who are associated with it expose Mein Kampf and juxtapose Mein Kampf to the Islamic Quran and Hadith to show that the foe, Islam, is very similar to Nazism. And we reject at all possible costs a connection. So we've been donating tax dollars to, and the largest of the U.S. Army's intelligence services had to say about Prophet of Doom, which is the single most effective tool to exposing why Muslims are terrorists. Because it is a 1,000-page analysis of the five oldest books of Islam. It takes the Quran, which is a jumbled mess out of with no chronological or contextual order, and sets it into the context of Muhammad's life, reordered it chronologically using the two hadith accounts that are one biographical, one historical, and therefore chronological. And it first dishes it by saying that, yeah, it's followed by a bunch of neo-Nazi skinheads. Not even remotely true. There isn't anyone that I even authorized to post Prophet of Doom on their site, that I formed alliances with no one who had a religious or political agenda. Even those that who I came to really like, for example, Ali Sena, who has a really effective anti-Islamic site that appeals to intellectuals. And Ali Sena writes books on behalf of atheism, and I chose not to partner with him. Most of the anti-Islamic sites, like, for example, Jihad Watch, are led by Christians. And I chose not to be associated with Christianity in the promotion of the truth about Islam as it comes from the Islamic scriptural sources. And if anybody were to approach me as a neo-Nazi, I was far more antagonistic towards them than I would ever have been towards a Muslim. There is no affinity whatsoever between neo-Nazis and violent fundamentalists and Prophet of Doom. Matter of fact, it was so amazing that she went immediately to, those who would use violent outbursts, they say, to deal with those who aren't like them, as opposed to a reasoned or a thoughtful response, was what she said next. And you think about that for a moment. Here's a site that uses words alone. Words that have been derived from the oldest Islamic sources to present the essence of Islam as effectively as and better documented than anyone else has ever attempted. And it begins and closes with the same admonition that this site is being made available, this research, so that you might understand the menace of Islam, protect yourselves from it, and help free Muslims from it. But one thing that if anything that we have been known for and continue to be known for is that we constantly say the only weapon that can be wielded at this menace is words. And that if you resort to bullets and bombs, you'll make a bad situation worse. As a matter of fact, I've been opposed to the U.S. government because the U.S. government has used bullets and bombs and has made a bad situation worse as a result. It is only words that can be wielded effectively. And what's so amazing is that this woman works for an organization whose sole purpose is to use violence as opposed to words. And yet her criticism of Prophet of Doom was that it inspires violence instead of a reasoned discourse. The opposite of what she was saying about Prophet of Doom is true, Prophet of Doom. And the opposite of what she was besmirching is true of the organization for whom she worked. Sobering, isn't it? How those engaged in intelligence for the U.S. military don't see who they are and don't see that they have become the very thing that they dismiss. Pressed a little further, this woman said that the problem of the book is that it doesn't understand Arabic and therefore is an out of context presentation of Islam that gives the wrong impression of the religion. But the fact is, there has never been a more contextual presentation of Islam than is found in Prophet of Doom. It would be impossible to create a more contextual presentation of the religion. Now, as it relates to Arabic, we'll return to that subject when Prophet of Doom continues to be our subject matter on Shattering Myths after the commercial break. It is amazing when those that are paid enormous amounts of money by the U.S. government to be intelligence officers for the military lack intelligence. To defend a criticism of Prophet of Doom based upon me not being schooled in Arabic is extraordinarily foolhardy. The fact is that the Quran, the oldest copies of the Quran, are in Paleo Arabic. It is a religious Arabic. It's a language that, there may be 10 to 20 people on the planet that are schooled in. It's a language, come to find out, that was created by Christians using Hebrew. The letters are Hebrew letters. The sounds are Hebrew sounds. Most of the words are Hebrew. The more I studied the Hebrew and the more I came to understand the Quran, what you find is that the single greatest tool to being able to properly understand the Quran is actually an understanding of Hebrew. Now, that being the case, Prophet of Doom doesn't capitalize on that, even though it makes the point that Paleo-Hebrew isn't a language that even 1/1,000th of 1% of the world's population understands. And it does make the point that much of the Quran is that words are Hebrew words, but it doesn't take it beyond that. The point I wanted to make is whether or not I speak Hebrew or not, or excuse me, Arabic or not, is irrelevant to Prophet of Doom, because in Prophet of Doom, I don't provide any translations.
That's what I was just going to say. When you went through Prophet of Doom, didn't you just take exactly what was there and put it in the order
Correct.
Of other dates? You didn't change anything. You didn't.
Right. So to use Arabic as a qualifier to dismiss Prophet of Doom is ignorant of the fact that in Prophet of Doom, the five most revered translations of the Quran were used. The most literal, which is the one published by the Saudi Arabians. The three most revered, which are all modeled the Elizabethan English of the King James, and the most popular new translation, which just uses modern English phrasing. And every Quran quotation is cited from one or more, or a blend of those five English translations, by the foremost Arabic scholars in the world. And as it relates to the hadith, every hadith citation came from translations performed by, again, the most esteemed Arabic English translation. I never questioned their translations. I simply say, this is how the hadith reads as translated by the foremost scholars. And so, to criticize it based upon the translation from Arabic to English is stupid. That's to say that if that is true, if its Arabic translations are invalid, then there is no valid Arabic translation into English. And if there can be no valid Arabic translation into English, if Arabic is such a deprived language, it is the only language in the world that can't be translated out of another, particularly recognizing that written Arabic didn't even exist until the late 7th century. That if it's so impoverished that it can't be translated, even though it's a derivative of Hebrew, what does that say about Arabic?
It says everything you need to know about Arabic, I guess.
the language is so lame that it cannot be translated into any other language. Do you know that means that 90% of the Muslims who are learning to recite the Quran in Arabic don't know what it means in the language they're reciting it in?
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Let's take a look. She's saying that you can't. Prophet of Doom isn't a good thing to look at because you don't know Arabic, but you took the five most popular translations of Arabic, people that mm-hmm. do know it, and
right.
they did translate it,
mm-hmm.
and those are what you used.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, still not good enough. So she's like, well, no, you can't do that. That's really her argument, because you didn't change anything. You took
nope.
the five most popular transcripts of it. And you just put them in chronological order.
Yeah, and by the way, she is not an Arabic scholar.
Oh.
So what could be more credible than taking the five most credible translations of Arabic to form the basis of your textual review? If that's not credible, what is credible? Whose translation would be credible? You know, if I postured my own, I could see that you'd have an argument, but I didn't posture my own.
If grabbing somebody else's translations of things isn't a credible way of doing things, I think a lot of people are going to have to give back some college degrees. Because there's a lot of things that are taught in college that aren't things that
right.
were translated by, you know, you or I.
It is pathetic that someone would dismiss it under that pretense. And what's really amazing is that the translations from the five most respected sources of the Quran, all of which, by the way, we posted on the Prophet of Doom site for years, the disagreement is really small, particularly on the words that are important. I mean, jihad is well known to be a physical fight. And there are very few things. The only things that they would disagree on, and I would use all five translations to show that there was no commonality of understanding, was the words that Muhammad made up. And Muhammad made up lots of words. You know, he literally didn't have a word for something. He just made it up. And so when people are trying to figure out what a nutfa drop is relative to the creation of human beings, and the word doesn't exist in any language, they're required to make up a definition, and they will differ in what they come up with because no one knows what it is.
He obviously didn't have a very good understanding of Arabic either.
No. Well, you have to go back to the reality that the Quran is hadith, that it's an oral report, that it went 100 years before any of it was written down because it was recited by an illiterate man amongst illiterate men. And the only way that it was passed on was for about 75 to 100 years, 3 to 4 generations of mouth to ear, verbally, just as is the hadith that comprise the four oldest hadith collections, one a biography, one a history, and two are topical arrangements of these hadith. That's all there is to Islam. Now, the reality is that when you go that long without a written means to memorialize what was said and done, and you're playing the game of the children's game of telephone, of mouth to ear and mouth to ear, and you do so over 75 to 100 and sometimes now 200 years without a written record, which end up is with garbage. The Quran is wholly unreliable. So are the hadith. And there is absolutely no credibility to either of them. But the fact is that it doesn't matter. Because all that is known about Muhammad, all that is known about Islam, is in those texts. And so if they're all false, because Muhammad never was, doesn't matter, because it's what Muslims believe. It's the essence of the religion. It's the foundation of the religion. It's like those that accused me of falsely attributing Galatians to Paul, even though Paul claims total and complete credit for Galatians. My response would be, if he didn't write it, so what? It's in the middle of the Christian Bible, and they believe it to be true. Therefore, it's important to expose and condemn what it says. And that's the basis of Prophet of Doom. It systematically exposes the written legacy now that dates back to the time where verbal Arabic communications were rendered to writing. And it takes the five oldest of those sources and puts them together to tell a consistent story about how Muhammad was a deadly plague, how he was repulsive, a womanizer, a rapist, a pedophile, incestuous, that he was vicious, a kidnapper, a slave trader, a ruthless terrorist, and that those descriptions are the dominant aspects of his life and character. That's what Prophet of Doom demonstrates. It is irrefutable. Not one person ever amongst the tens of thousands of Muslims who had a conniption fit over Prophet of Doom, not one ever demonstrated that a single word was mistranslated. Ever. Not a single one of the tens of thousands of Muslims that had a conniption fit with Prophet of Doom over its first 10 years ever demonstrated that anything in the book was taken out of context. The two arguments that were rendered against it, there are tens of thousands of Muslims who tried and not a single Muslim made the case. Not a single person was able to offer the argument that you don't know Arabic. And yet here's an officer of America's armed forces tasked with the job of understanding the terrorist threat, which is perpetrated 99.9% by Muslims, and the single most effective document ever comprised to help her and the nation understand the nature of the Islamic threat, is disregarded based on pointless, moronic, ignorant, and irrational arguments. If you want to know why America will ultimately be destroyed by Islam, all you need to do is look to this woman. I want to leave you with, in today's program, this connection between Ebola and religion, particularly Islam. Both are deadly pathogens. For both, there is no cure. Now, you can prevent somebody from catching religion by the Torah, by telling them the truth, by providing them Yahweh's guidance to disassociate with the religious pathogen. Yahweh is constantly telling us, don't emulate the practices that are of the Gentiles, of the religious nations. Don't do that stuff. It's really deadly. Don't bring that into your house. And before the chosen people could reside in Yahweh's house, he wanted to eradicate the disease. Well, when it comes to Ebola, the only remedy is isolation, quarantining it, because you can't save a person with Ebola. Now, it is a 90% cure rate, so you'd say, okay, well, some people can survive it. Yes, there are people that you can give enormous numbers of blood transfusions and keep them alive long enough for their internal antibodies to have the disease go into remission. But we don't know enough about whether or not they're rid of the disease or when it'll flare up or if they're contagious to other people. And now you've brought a deadly contagion for which there is no cure into your house. Just as Americans allowed Muslims into this country. It's a disease. It enrages people to hate. And the fact is that you might say, you know, that's being mean to Muslims. No, I know the Quran and Hadith and know Muhammad and Allah far better than any Muslim. I know that I'm not being mean when I say that Islam is just like Ebola. It's a disease without a cure. I've recognized in this process that a good Muslim is unreachable, uncurable. They're a menace to themselves and to society, and there's nothing that anyone can do to resolve that. Evidence and reason are meaningless, and they're the only tools that ever work. And so you only have bad Muslims who really are Muslim by birth and are beginning to question the stupidity of their religion and its vicious signature, which is Islamic terrorism. And words resonate with them, but not with those who have swallowed, who have ingested the disease. And so while I'm sure it sounds to humanistic ears cruel to say that the only thing we can do is to quarantine the disease, but that's the truth. The two religious missionaries that went over from America to try to help those with Ebola, you know, I understand the humanity that says, I want to help. These are sad situations. But you can't help them. This is the disease without cure. The best way to help the world with this disease is to quarantine it, to isolate it, to keep people from it. the best cure for the disease that is religion. If you stop it in its tracks by quarantining it, by acknowledging that it is deadly, acknowledging that there is no cure, then you're doing those who have yet to be infected a great service. That was the purpose of Prophet of Doom. To a large degree, it is the purpose of this program. Sometimes the most merciful act is one that humanity doesn't see as being merciful. But it's only after you've collected the facts, you come to understand the problem, that you realize that providing people false hope is a horrible thing to do. Tolerating, embracing, accepting multiculturalism and trying to promote the myth that we can all just get along and that we need to embrace and see the good qualities in every religion. Now, that's what leads to the kind of carnage that we're witnessing throughout Syria and Iraq and Gaza and Egypt and Libya and Pakistan and Afghanistan. And on it goes. It's time for us to wake up and embrace the truth.